Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 162. This is a show about all things Linux, hardware, software, anything that happens to come across the news feed that we want to share with our listeners, all sorts of great stuff. And by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Super Coop, and I am once again joined by my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, the Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Mr. Coop of Soupness. I don't know. Didn't sound as good as it did in my head, at least. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I got a little bit of a headache, settling into fatherhood twice over, and I feel like I've been hit by a truck. But
yes, and that truck is named Link.
That's right. Yeah. But other than that, I've been keeping up on Linux news and stuff. Haven't really played around with anything the last couple weeks, but what I have been doing is playing a lot of Ultra Street Fighter 4.
You'll have that.
You know I'm a big fighting game nerd. Mm-hmm. I busted out some of my old fight sticks, got an Xbox Live, and I've since ordered a new fight stick, started playing with a local group. I mean, I'm just completely consumed. I'm completely consumed by it. Yeah, it's a whole, like...
You're kicking it up a notch.
We could probably start a show. Let me just say that.
Well, I just have to ask one question, and that is, all things being equal, who is your desired character, and who's the guy you love to beat up on?
Well, ever since, you know, the original Street Fighter 2, I always played as Ryu. Barely played Guile, but lately, getting back into the game, I have a bunch of bad habits. So there's actually a character called Cody in Super Street Fighter 4, and he was an old alpha character, and he's actually an old Capcom character from the series Final Fight, which I know that you've played.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm learning to play him because his movements are restricted a little more than Ryu's, so where he can't get away. Basically, by playing him, I'm in a more confined space, so I won't rely on my bad habits, and I'm actually getting better. Right. So
very cool.
And I love beating up on bigger characters like a Sagat and a Zangief.
Zangief, to me, was one of the most challenging characters to be, but most satisfying when you beat somebody.
Yes, we'll say definitely. That.
Very cool.
How about yourself? What have you been up to?
Fighting, trying to stay sane, questionably successful. I'll say that. Holiday weekend kill me. How to say that? Holiday weekend kill me.
Oh yeah, I was very upset I didn't get to attend and or run a single barbecue. So I hope you, the good folks out there, got some good barbecue on the 4th of July, because I didn't.
Yeah, not me either.
That's okay.
Yeah, things could have been worse. I could have been poisoned.
That's right. Yeah, we could have had drones flying overhead, issuing fines to people setting off illegal fireworks in my neighborhood. But that's a whole other big story.
Okay. This technically is Linux-related,
yes,
but it's not the story whatsoever. Because there's little doubt in my mind someone, either on a chip or somewhere, had some Linux. But I'm to ask if you could give me a 30,000-foot view to the bunch of... What you firsthand saw on, I believe it was on July 4th night itself. For those who don't know,
yep,
outside the U.S., July 4th, big holiday, many fireworks. It's maybe that and New Year's have the two most fireworks in our country. And most of the time, in most of the places in the United States, technically, most of the fireworks that most of the people light are technically illegal. But most police officers basically don't care unless they're causing a big scene or getting hurt. But in your neighborhood, they were a little bit more "quote unquote" proactive.
Yeah. So here's what happened. Normally, we don't traditionally set off fireworks here at our house. We would go to, you know, gatherings and watch them set off. We'd stop and get a little, you know, something to contribute, you know, as you would. But this year, I was like, the boys probably aren't gonna care. We'll just go out in the front yard and watch the ones at a nearby, there's a nearby park where they set off a bunch of big fireworks. So we could stand out literally in our cul-de-sac and look and see all this big fireworks display going off. And so those displays are kind of intermittent. And I'm thinking, well, while I'm out here, I'll just throw the garage door open and I'll start, you know, recycling, you know, stuff I haven't, you know, I have boxes from when I moved in almost 10 years ago. So I'm cleaning my garage as we're out there, you know, enjoying the fireworks displays. So... about 5-10 minutes into that, I hear this whizzing sound up in the air, and I immediately know what it was. I was like, ooh, someone's got a copter. Someone's got a quadcopter or an octocopter or whatever. And my wife was like, what is that? And I go, oh, look. And I'm pointing at it because it's flying overhead. and it's got a flashing light on it, much like a helicopter, like an actual helicopter would, you know. But it's not whizzing around like all willy nilly like you would if you were to fly it yourself, or at least to have a picture that you would fly it. It seems to be going in patterns, and I see it stop. I don't know. It's in my neighborhood. I see it stop in its pattern, and I see it turn. And then I see it, it looked like it was speeding away really fast, but it turns out it was dropping. It was dropped probably about 50 feet, and then it just started flashing. And I mean, like big flashes, like you know, telephoto flash. I realized it's taking pictures of something, and I realized it's taking pictures of those people across the neighborhood that are setting off those illegal fireworks, right? And then not 60 seconds later, this cop car whizzes past my cul-de-sac, and I walk to the end of our street, and I look, and that car, or at least a cop car, was at this neighbor's house, and he was talking to the neighbors, and I'm almost positive he's out there writing him a ticket, which led me to believe that that drone was taking, or that copter was taking photos, and potentially manned by someone in the police department, and scanning the area for people who were doing it.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if that was a officer's private toy that they decided to put into service, quote-unquote.
Right.
But either way, it gives me an extremely uncomfortable, unsettling feeling in my gullet where I don't own any guns in my house whatsoever. And it's a choice. I just don't feel like I need, quote unquote, guns. But I will say, if I owned a gun and I saw quadcopters flying over my house, spying on people, honestly, whether it's police or not police, I'm going to be extremely jaded towards that, because how do I know they're not peeking in my windows? And I will say, one of my sons frequently, uncomprehendably, opens up the blinds in his window, and then I go upstairs and he's in the bathroom butt naked getting ready to hop in the shower, and I tell him, you know, you do realize you leave your blinds like wide open? And he just looks out the door and freaks out. Oh, I'm like, well, dude, you're the one who opened them up. So I don't like the idea of any spying going on, period. And I don't care if someone out there tries to tell me, if you had nothing to hide, don't worry about it. Please come say that to my face so I can knock a couple of your teeth out, because that's not the question. Just because I don't have anything to hide doesn't mean I like to have a camera in the bathroom with me.
Right.
What's in my house is private.
So I posted this story on Google+, and a lot of people responded. A lot of people were disgusted when they found that. And keep in mind, for those of you who don't know, I live in a small town in Oregon. I'm not in some big metropolitan city where, you know, they have a huge police department and there's a big, you know, like tech presence. It's just a small town in Oregon. It's in between Portland and Eugene. So like in between University of Oregon and Portland, to kind of give you an idea. And I didn't know that basically it was illegal for law enforcement, or supposedly illegal for law enforcement, to use these things as of right yet to spy on people. I didn't know that, because I don't follow any of that stuff. I just look at that and I go, that's a cool piece of machinery. But people were posting on there, I thought that was illegal. And then I was talking with Dora. I was like, maybe someone was just, yeah, like he said, you know, like a, you know, the deputy or whatever was like, oh, check what I got. If I see anything, I'll email you or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, but yeah, like it was too much of a coincidence for all of that to happen. But yeah, it very, very plain as day. This fireworks display went off. It stopped in this pattern, turned around, dropped down to where it could take photographs, or at least cast light on an area for the cop car to see. And then once the cop car was there, it went back on its way. And it was going around my neighborhood for at least 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. I mean, and the whole thing is, I am a little bit vexed and jaded, because I do feel like law enforcement of all scales should have the ability to have the tools to do their job better. But not at my quote-unquote personal privacy. Now, this is like a George Carlin not in my backyard kind of syndrome. And I understand the hypocrisy going on in my own head over this. But I'll just say, if all things were equal, and I had lots of money, and I was sitting out on my back lawn, and I saw a quadcopter going by, the dream weapon I would have would be a, like, propelled net that was also a Faraday cage that when it hit a quadcopter, it would envelop the quadcopter, bring it down, and Faraday cage around it. And then I would literally just leave it there, because I don't want to technically destroy other people's property or government property, but I definitely want to inhibit them having a super easy time of just peeking everywhere, because that's the way I look at it. They're peaking everywhere. Granted, they might have a really good reason for it, but it's such a sensitive area. I don't see how any state, local, or federal law is going to do this and have it sound okay.
Right.
But that's not really Linux, but this is the kind of issues we're all going to have to deal with here soon. And it's completely, at least right now, a first world problem.
And what really bothers me is that if it got any photos of me, it got photos of me not enjoying barbecue.
And bending over, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Mm. And trust me, that is a sight.
Yes. Yes, it is. I wanted to remind people again, do not forget, vote with your money. Maybe we might not have real physical dollars for long. We're going to all have credit money and digital currency, but vote with that money as well. And vote for companies that support the breadth, the scope, the entire scope of open source. A company like Think Penguin, to be honest, is among the top tier of respectful companies in the open source world. I'm not saying they're the best of anything, but I know I respect Chris, the owner, and he respects every operating system that is open. So I really want to encourage people, don't forget, when you need something, whether it's a USB stick, a Wi-Fi dongle, a printer, a laptop, a desktop, a mini computer, all kinds of open compatible hardware or open hardware itself, check out Think Penguin. And don't forget, we have coupon codes. The only thing I ask is that I give you a coupon code, and if you do not use that coupon code, you please let me know that you do not use it so I can give it back out to someone else. If you think you might use it, just hold on to it, and if you do, you do. But it's definitely a very positive company to support, in my humble opinion.
Yes, and we got a couple emails from David and from Damon, and we will go ahead and forward you those coupon codes. And one of them was going to be the linchpin and tipping the wife over the fence in order to get her to authorize a purchase. So I hope that works. If not, let me talk to her. Worst case scenario, she gets so upset with me, she never talks to me again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, there is that. So, yeah, we do have the codes. I met this guy at, NELF 2 years ago now.
Yes, sir.
Very, very cool guy. Very laid back. And if you think of someone owning their own, you know, sort of do-it-yourself, you know, I'm going to build you a laptop type of person, you think, they might kind of try to be pushy and push an agenda or this or that. And no, he was able to answer all questions about every piece of hardware in the entire thing because he's literally picking it, making it sure that you're able to run any distro on this hardware, which was really cool. And we've talked about this before too, you know, even if you go buy a Dell at Best Buy tomorrow and you wipe it and you're like, I'm throwing Linux on it in defiance. Well, you're still technically paying a Windows tax. Mm-hmm. You're paying more for the hardware than you would normally. So at least I ask you if you're looking to purchase a laptop, or even they do have some desktops, some micro PCs as well. If you're in the market, at least just go check them out. That's what I ask. And if you do think that it might be a viable purchase for you, we do have some coupon codes that give you a slight discount. You just send an email to podcast@linuxforthestofus.com. We'll hook you up and then hopefully help you out with that future purchase.
Absolutely. And I'll say, here's one of the biggest bottom lines I can give you. And I'm going to actually talk politics, which I never do.
Oh, wow. Here we go.
Buying a Dell computer and then coming home and then trying to install Linux on it is like going in to your voting booth, voting for Barack Obama, then spending 4 years with picket signs about how bad of a person he is. It makes no sense. To do something like that literally makes no sense. If the day you leave that election booth, you're already picketing against him, why vote for him in the first place? I just can't implore people more. That is the most important decision you can make, because it doesn't matter what you do with that computer when you get it home. It's basically now done. It's a done deal. You can put Linux on it all you want. You can devote time to doing stuff on it all you want. You can help other people with it all you want, but you've already voted. Just try to do your best and support open companies when possible. And if it isn't Think Penguin, support somebody else, but make sure you support somebody. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Didn't know if you want to jump on more emails.
Oh, yeah. We got one more email from our good friend Rick Crouch. Let me bring it up here. He actually he sent this in. It was pretty cool. So he was, Rick has recently been experimenting with XFCE, and he sent an email in about Gigolo. So Rick wrote in and said, I just put together a Linux box and decided to give XFCE a spin. Good idea, Rick. When I was looking through the available programs, I found one called Gigolo. I didn't know what it was, so I went to its website. He lists the website, and we'll include that in the show notes, to look it up. It's used to mount remote file systems. Okay, fine. But in the program description, it says, about the name Gigolo. You may ask why it's called a Gigolo, a strange name for an application, but actually it fits pretty well for what it does. It mounts what it's told to. Mm. He said he almost spit out his coffee when he read that. I thought it was quite humorous. I love when you dig into, you know, manuals and find little... It's almost like a little Easter egg. It's like, I wonder why that was why it was called that, or I wonder what this command means.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie on this one, Cody, okay? Here's door ignorance spewing
out. Here's you telling.
Yeah, this is just the truth. I am so.
Yeah, you telling the truth.
I'm so horribly bad at spelling. I've been suggesting this for years. I looked at it. I wasn't sure how it's pronounced. So I just said that G because I wasn't sure it was the word gigolo. And I'm too lazy to go and type in pronounce and type and paste it in.
You?
Yeah. So I know for a fact this is a really good tool and it works really good. I just had no idea what's called Gigolo. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, thanks, Rick, for sending that in. Yeah, for those of you who do need to remotely mount file systems, then yeah, that would be the tool for you. And you know it's cool because the developers have a sense of humor.
Yes. And I'm 99.999% sure what this actually does is it can let you mount remote file systems during boot, which is not during login. So hypothetically, this means you can do a lot of things in cron and other system type levels. And as long as the computer's on and as long as the other computer's on, and it, you know, it will mount before you even log in so other processes can work. Typically, that's the hardest thing to do is to mount pre-login, because a lot of things have it on your login session. So that's the other reason why I always told people to you use this tool. Not to mention, it's actually almost easy to use. Mounting remote file systems by its very nature is not simple, but this tool makes it easy. I will say that.
Very cool.
Yep. Okay, do you want to go to the links now?
Of course. Okay.
I have no idea who sent me this one. I saw this in the Google Plus Podcasters community, which is a community often plagued by spam and people just trying to get juice and links and hits and other stuff. But this kind of thing slips through the cracks once in a while. Now, this is a podcasting community, not a Linux community, not an open source community or anything like that. So when I saw this kind of link, it definitely caught my eye. It's a link to Tech Republic, and it's called Open Source Tools, 5 Outstanding Audio Editors.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. I click on these type of links whenever I see them just to see if there's something I don't know about or something I need to revisit. And a couple of the choices are very obvious, maybe? Yeah, we'll stick with that. Number one, Audacity. It's the Swiss Army knife of audio editing. It can do so many different types of tasks. It's really great. The problem I have with it is it's a destructive editor, so I only use it for very specific needs when I can't find a non-destructive editor to do, like truncate silence. Noise removal in this tool is really good. There's a couple other small things. So I do use Audacity every time I edit a show. I only have it open for maybe 2 or 3 minutes per each session. Number two, Audor. This is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, whatever you want to call it. This is the beast. This is the big boy. This is what other audio editors strive to be, is the best way I can put it. It's too advanced for me, requires a little bit too much training, a little bit too much upfront knowledge, and from what I'm led to believe, it's not completely free software friendly. I'll just say that. I know technically it is, but the owner of it does a couple things. He really encourages people, quote unquote, to pay for it, which I'm not against, but I have another tool that works great for me. But number three on their list was new to me. I never heard of this. Traverso?
Yeah.
Traverso. This looked very interesting, and I honestly liked the line. They basically said more towards Audacity type, but relies on Jack. Okay, whatever. But it's a lot easier to use than All Doors. So that line kind of got me interested. So I'm going to toy with it. I'm going to play with it. But I find it hard to believe anything's going to move me off of, which is their number four selection, Q Track. Besides being Clock 2 approved, which gives it unreachable marks by any other software in my mind, it's almost a very easy tool to use. It's a very flexible tool to use. I love the fact that I can assign hotkeys to anything that I want them to be on almost anything that you can do. It uses Jack. I have it in the VM. It's already pre-configured, so there's no work there. The only flaw with it is more geared towards music editing and not spoken word editing. So it cannot do everything I need to do, which is why I still use other tools once in a while. But it streamlines my process so greatly, so much more simplified. And I can save profiles and templates so effectively. I don't see me going off this tool too soon. And then the number five. LMMS. This is the one that is most like, I want to say the tool called Fruity Loops, which is a Windows, I believe, tool. Yep. Gets really high marks, I'll say that, from a lot of people. This seems really heavy towards music editing, not spoken word editing. So I don't even look, and this one looks really complicated too.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, and I know that you experienced this, and I've told you this before, but the audience may have forgotten. But when you're looking for a workstation, okay, whether it be a desk, a piece of software, think of it as a toolbox with a bunch of tools in it. Just because you walk into, let's say, Home Depot tomorrow and you buy a toolbox with 82 tools in it, where realistically you probably only need four or five to do the job that you need, you don't need to learn all 82 tools, but just having them there and having the ability to look at them and go, I'm going to look at this one and see what it's about. I'm going to focus on maybe upping my skills in these two next week. Always go for something a little more complicated than you might need, because you can get I've used Pro Tools in the past, Qtractor, I mean Adobe Premiere, all sorts of video and high end audio equipment, and it. You can use it as a basic level. You don't need to have all the windows open, use all the options, do all that. You can just get in there and do it very simply. But I've also used stuff on the low end that's really restrictive. And once you think, oh, I wonder if I can do that one thing with this piece of software, and you can't, you're like, oh, well, this is kind of worthless then. So, I mean, it's especially with, correct me if I'm wrong, but all these solutions are free as in beer?
Mostly, yes. The only way that the answer is no is Aldor, to get a binary, like a deb package, you need to donate. You can build it yourself, or you can download distributions that already have it built into it. But if you want to put it into your own distro or do it yourself, you literally have to build it from source. You have to compile it. So that's the only downside. But okay, here's the other thing I'll say. Aldor, Qtractor, LMMS, and I believe Traverso. I'm not sure about Traverso, but I know the three I mentioned can extremely benefit on usability if you use closed source, proprietary, pay-only VST plugins. That really what they do is they give you a prettier interface to those plugins. A more frictionless experience dealing with the tools, where you literally have sliders and knobs and not just a very dry number algorithm kind of thing. I believe if you option for those closed tools, Aldor and LMMS would probably work fantastic. I'm purposefully optioning to not go for those tools because I cannot distribute those tools, and the VM I use to do my audio editing, I've basically sworn to having it available to everyone else. So there's no secret sauce, there's no magic sauce, there's no nothing I do in my post-production process that anyone cannot immediately duplicate on their side without any fees, without any DRM, without any issues that might come up.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? To those people that might kind of whine about, I got to make a donation to get my own sort of certified copy of it, do with it what I want. Go look at how much some of this audio editing software actually costs, like on Windows or Mac. And then all of a sudden, you'd be like, you know what? I'll take my $10 donation up to 30, and I'm still saving about, you know, $600. So
yeah, they get expensive.
I guess it's worth it.
They get expensive very, very quickly, which is why I implore people, the more you use free tools, the more to remind yourself once in a while, go donate. Make sure the people that, you know, the tools that you use, you show thanks to once in a while. It's that little kick that might help them to push the next version out or to get something else done. It's always a good move.
Well, it's also a reminder to them that people are appreciating their hard work, regardless of how much money they are generating from it.
Right. Yes. So. And that's why, that's the other reason why I'm a little excited to try to turn the corner, have this network turn the corner and make some steady money, because I would love to give steady income back to some more open source developers. I would love to do that just to show support for guys making Tractor, guys putting time and effort into tools that I basically rely on.
There you go.
Yeah. Now this next one, this is also, I'm going to say, is not truly Linux related, so we won't stay on it long, but I just found it and thought it was very interesting. Never heard of it before. A couple of the guys I pinged also never heard of it before, but apparently this has been around since 1993. It's called Live Code. Live Code is basically HTML. No. Okay. In short, Live Code is a programming language that supposedly will let you quickly and easily make apps. Right now they have a pledge drive going on trying to get $350,000. I literally found out about this before this pledge even started, and I started to look at it. I like disruption, and if this is as quick and as easy and as whatever that they say it is, then I love the idea of it. I don't see it getting $395,000. It's already it's only 7 days in, $45,000 to go. I don't know if that means they're going to reach the goal, because that is a lot of money. With 23 days to go, they basically need to go $350,000.
That's a chunk of change.
In the grand scheme of thing, I utterly concur. I don't know if this is going to get the traction, let's say, because it does look like all of their pledge stuff is being hosted on their own servers. This doesn't look like an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter, which I'm all for people trying to self-pledge. I'll just say, if you go check this out and think this is really interesting, then you too might want to go pledge. You can basically quickly deploy apps to iOS, Android, desktop, or the web. I like that kind of, I don't know the right word, synergy, whatever going on. I don't know if this is going to actually work, actually take off, but I definitely thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it does sound cool. And I believe the word you were looking for was a synergization.
Yes.
Which is a Dorism.
It quite is, yes.
You're welcome.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. With that said, the beautiful thing about Linux, in one of my opinions, is the breadth, the scale, the scope, the range of code you can play with to get stuff done, to make things, to have fun. I've been playing with Cordova. I've been trying to, correction, play with Cordova, PhoneGap, and Eclipse IDE to make quote-unquote Android apps. Having a little bit of problems with that, but I'm going to see if I can actually make that done. But this article here over at TechMint, I guess, TECMINT, doesn't look like it's anywhere associated with Linux Mint, I will say that. It's a very bloggy, newsy type posting site. Here was one article I found that the actual content of the article is basically pointless. It's basically 30 big companies and devices running on GNU Linux. You have, of course, the obvious ones, Google, Twitter, Facebook, Amazon, IBM. If someone doesn't already know that they're running primarily on Linux, then they're not paying attention. But then you have other companies that you might not think about it, like McDonald's, NASA, but then you have other things basically like navies, armies, Air Force, military, DOD.
Armed services.
Yeah, armed services. But then you also have obviously stuff like bullet trains, NASDAQ stock exchanges, big corporate enterprise backbones, nuclear projects, air traffic controllers. So what I'm trying to say is, here's one of the beautiful things about Linux. If you want a job in Linux, the range of places you can go and the types of things you can do are quite honestly only going to be limited by your mind, unless your goal is to work on Linux and make Windows programs. Then you might have an issue.
Right. But
it really does seem to me like virtually anything else is obtainable, whether you want to work on web projects that help nonprofit companies keep better bookkeeping or organization or scheduling, or whether you want to create mobile apps, or whether you want to create games, or whether you want to help a nuclear fusion reactor become more efficient. I mean, the range of where Linux is being embedded into industries and businesses is only growing and expanding. That's basically why I found this list a little bit interesting. There's not a lot of details on any of the listings. It's just a good list, I think.
No, it is, and it definitely illustrates how reliant not only enterprises, but the consumers becoming upon Linux, whether they know it or not, whether it's, you know, on the back end running a server, if it's running some sort of a small home theater media device. It is, we are, in, well, actually, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I almost said we are infiltrating, but we are, that doesn't sound very kosher. We spoke of this for years too. You know, people have been using Linux in one form or another, and they just don't know it for a long time. And once you kind of say, oh, do you have one of these? Oh, well, that runs Linux.
Right.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, and did you notice how it's never crashed before? Yeah, I have. Wow, okay, all right, cool.
Yeah, and it doesn't blue screen. It doesn't constantly bug you for upgrade fees or charges or anything else. Yeah, the biggest one I think that people don't know is set-top boxes and phones. They just think, well, they just work, you know. And
right.
Underneath the facade, the GUI is typically some kind of Linux running. Okay, this next one is over at Pharonix. And I will say, I, too, have had questionable experiences on Pharonix in the past because they seem to be quite clickbaity. And they seem to make some pretty broad claims. Not all of them come to fruition, it seems like. This one, though, seems very humble, which is one of the reasons why I kind of believe it. It says, Intel is working on a Linux networking stack for small systems. This, again, goes back into the business, making money, making devices, making companies. You will never hear someone say they're working on a small networking stack for Windows because it's Windows. Closed source, proprietary, right. Only certain things people can do. With an open modular system such as Linux, and the scalability that comes into Linux, the logic of making a smaller network stack comes with an extreme benefit because everything else is so modular, you can stream everything else down a lot. AKA the Internet of Things that is coming, yada, yada. The lighter the network stack, the less resources you have to rely on overall, period. So you can put more, quote-unquote, powerful applications in less hardware. This is the kind of thing that I think, these are the kind of steps that are going to be constantly happening in the background, making Linux lighter, faster, more robust, while it's geared for super small devices, I guarantee you some of the things they're going to do in that small stack, they're going to teach other developers how they could have done it differently too, thus making their code better as well. And to be honest, I love hearing Intel working on these kind of things, because typically, at least in my experience, it seems like virtually every time I hear Intel doing this kind of thing, it's something that they eventually open source, or they open source from the beginning. So everybody can take, take it, you know, which is one of the reasons I like the Intel NUC. I had to explain to somebody at one point in time, when you buy an Intel NUC, a genuine quote-unquote Intel NUC, you're buying it from Intel, which means there's no RAM and there's no hard drive in it. And I had to explain to them, the reason there's no RAM and no hard drive in it is because Intel does not make RAM and Intel does not make hard drives. Intel makes motherboards, processors, wireless chipsets, hardware NICs, that kind of thing. So that's all that's in the NIC. If you want RAM and a hard drive, you got to buy that on your own or buy a already pre-confiled, pre-configured system like the ThinkPenguin computer.
Now, as a quick aside, because I haven't listened to the last couple episodes I haven't been on, but you have an Intel NUC yourself. Can you speak in a limited fashion about what you've done with it so far?
Yes. Right now it is upstairs being the quote-unquote family computer. Before this, they were running on a 8-year-old quote-unquote Vista laptop that I got given to me that I put Linux on. I closed the lid on the laptop, slid it in the keyboard tray, hooked up an external monitor, keyboard, mouse, and that was their computer. So now they're on an Intel NUC. They're on the cheapest, the lowest, the least powerful Intel NUC, which at the time was $179 new. Now I believe it's $129 or $139 new.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, I got given to me, I want to say, 4 gigs of RAM and a 68 gig SSD hard drive in it. Okay, it's the lowest. And Intel, I believe, Celeron, it's an Intel Celeron processor. Okay.
Oh, okay.
But that thing boots faster than both of my quad core i5, 16 gig of RAM. One of them has an SSD in it, full desktop computers. The only thing
I don't doubt it.
I kind of didn't. My logic was, well, it's a smaller.
How awesome could this thing be?
Right. Yeah, because it's so cheap. You know, it has decent bus speed on it, and everything is so physically closer together. That's my logic of part of the reasons why it boots so fast. But I will say also, in hindsight, that's running a newer Linux distribution than both of my desktops. So that could have something to do with it as well. I didn't realize that at first. And I'll say this. I could not load Ubuntu 12.04 on that NUC. Wouldn't even boot properly. I had to go to 14.04. And it might have a type of UEFI on it, is what I'm thinking.
No, it makes sense, yeah.
But one of the...
Okay, so hypothetically, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but let's say today someone were to go buy that, let's say $130, $140 bucks just for the bare-bones NUC, right? Mm-hmm. And then like a low-end SSD now, they're getting down to where they're like ultra-affordable, like $60 to $80.
Yeah.
Or less, depending on what sale you get. And then 4 gigs of RAM, that's about another $40, $60. So for under $300, you can get one of these up and running with an SSD, with over the minimum requirement of RAM, and have a speedy little box to do all sorts of cool little things on. So, you know, we being, well, I say we as a door nines, and some of our listeners as well, being Americans, it's always about bigger, better, faster. Got to have, you know, what does my neighbor have? Well, you know, I got to get whatever is better than what he has just to show him up the SOB, you know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas, I mean, I don't really have any room to talk. I just upgraded my computer. But for under a sub $500, if you were to build your own machine, you can get some really good hardware into a tiny hamburger size form factor or large hamburger size form factor and have it just run your house, which is, we are in the future. It's great.
Yeah. And I'll say, you can get quote unquote, like, I don't want to say gaming level Intel NUCs, but you can get NUCs closer to quote unquote gaming level computers. You're going to pay for it because that small form factor does come at a quote unquote price. For daily driver type computers, I do feel like it's so competitive, so unbelievably competitive. why not take a look at it? Now there is going to be a link in the show notes to the one. It's now $149, but it also comes with a mount. And this is the interesting part, I thought. For most monitors of today, you can basically take off where the back connects, where the stand connects to your monitor, and you can mount on the back of that the Intel NUC itself.
The VESA mount.
Right. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, most monitors don't even utilize that, but they have the four holes there in that configuration with little rubber sort of spudger deals like in the holes, and you just peel those out, and yeah, it'll either have it in a four-hole or a six-hole configuration. And yeah, what's really cool, didn't Liam buy one of these and actually VESA mount to the back of one of his displays? Yeah,
this is his old NUC.
Right, yeah. So talk about, small form factor anyway, but having it also hidden back behind the monitor, it's fantastic.
Yeah, the thing that I will say, here's the perfect use case for an Intel NUC. I'll give you two. One, silent home theater computer. Now, it's not completely silent, but it's quieter than a desktop. But number two, maybe one of the more perfect podcasting rigs you can get. Because with it behind your computer, with the mic in front of the with the computer behind the monitor and the mic in front of the monitor, it's going to be even harder for you to pick up that sound in your microphone. So I like it for both of those use cases. What I really want to do with it, and I still might do this, I'm going to see if I can ratchet on RetroArch and have it as a game emulator upstairs that should be able to run things like N64 ROMs like butter.
Oh, of course.
But I have to get the good interface for that, or else it will not be family approved.
You'll be all for naught.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, I did have Windows installed on that NUC for a very short time. But every time I saw anybody on the computer, except for me, all I kept thinking about was, it's getting infected, it's getting infected, it's getting infected, it's getting infected. I kept just swearing, they're going to click something, and they're going to get infected. Any second, they're going to, and I'm going to have to go, and I'm going to have to, I don't like doing this. So I
can see you doing that.
So I took it off. Now, coincidentally, the very next day, I saw this article over at ZDNet by Larry Seltzer, not Stevie Ray Vaughn, whatever his name is. And this is a genuine Microsoft report. Microsoft once in a while tries to be transparent with certain things. Okay, I will give them a lot of credit for that, where they don't have to be. But here's a Microsoft report that basically said downloaded malware exploded in late 2013. I will say, by looking at this, I don't think it's an exaggeration to use the word exploded compared to how it was in mid-2013. I don't know about before that, how active or not active it was, but it also gives examples of like some of the malicious, they say legit programs. They don't seem like they're legit programs to me. The example I give is 7.7-zip instead of 7-zip. Best codecs pack. When I know in Windows world, when I heard codecs pack, first thing I thought was violent infection. And there's a couple other more like speed analysis. I mean, they just ooze of badware, in my opinion. So I'll just say, if you or your loved one has a Windows computer, once in a while, periodically, just for the heck of it, run a scan external from the operating system. If you can, if you can't, just scan what you can once in a while, because it wouldn't shock me if it actually has an infection, but it was just not, breaking yet.
I can imagine your wife sitting there using it. You won't believe this email that Deborah just sent, and you just like clenching your fists.
I would jump over her and like pull the plug out of the wall.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if she was running, what do you run? Mint on all your machines, right, Dora?
No. Not quite. It's a Ubuntu, basically. Well, I would say this. Mint is nothing more than a Ubuntu derivative. Send your hate mail. I don't care. I'm sticking with Ubuntu for now. I came close to putting Debian on their device upstairs, but I stuck with to Ubuntu, and the excuse I'll use for everyone out there is you should only install what you're comfortable supporting. I'm most comfortable supporting Ubuntu, so I installed Ubuntu.
There you go. Yeah, because you know that within 24 hours, they're going to have some questions, and you can't very well tell them, well, I'll Google it tomorrow and get back to you in a couple of days.
Doesn't work. No. Worst customers ever. I'll just say that.
Yep.
Now, we're going to go back again to the whole idea of money in Linux. I will say, before I get to this article, one of the best things I think people can do for a career move and for a educational learning experience kind of thing, and because let me tell you something, schools and colleges and trade schools cannot teach you experience. So one of the good experiences would be to join communities of development and become a member of that team and get things done. You will learn more in that short period of time than any place else. I'll say that because people are the hardest thing to work with, not computers. I'm just saying. And here's another example we have of companies literally going all in on open, quote unquote, technologies. Now, I cannot find any explicit details of this, but I have little doubt in my mind a huge majority of this backbone is going to be open source software, GPL software or Apache software, but free, quote unquote, software. And it's an article over at ZDNet yet again, this one by Charlie Osborne, again, not Stevie Ray J. Von Nichols. HP, one of the companies that a lot of people have venom about, spit a lot of venom about. And when we were in NELF, we were talking to a genuine HP guy who's been at HP for years, and he said one of the worst things HP does is let people know what kind of things they do in the realm of open source.
Oh. Okay.
And I agreed with him because I had no idea they were doing anything, much less something. And it turns out they actually do a hell of a lot. And here's another example. HP basically came out in a press release, said they are going to invest $1 billion in open source cloud computing. It's going to launch Helion portfolio.
Yep.
Now, the best I can come up with is this Helion is looking to leverage OpenStack Community Edition, and it's going to basically be try to be like competitors with like Amazon. I love competition. The main beneficiaries of any competition are us, the end users, the consumers. So I am all for any company wanting to disrupt the open environment, especially when they used open source tools, aka hiring people to do this work. I'm legitimately excited to see what they're going to do. I want to see more and more and more and more jobs being made in this type of industry. And if it's with HP, it's with HP. If it's with OpenStack, it's with OpenStack. If it's with whoever, as long as it's dealing with open source software, I think it's a good move.
I agree.
And if you go to HP does have a genuine Helion page, which is, of course, buried in a long string that makes no sense to anyone. But it actually goes through a lot of, let's say, jargon like with its expansive portfolio of private, public, and hybrid cloud consisting of market-leading hardware, software, and services, only HP Helion brings it all together for you. Sure, if you say so.
Only one way to find out. HP?
Well,
give us a taste.
Yeah, and I'll have an actual cloud guy look at this because it's all Greek to me.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, now, this next one is a, I don't want to say everyday hack because not everyone would need this, but I love the simplicity of this hack. And we knew about this for a while on Linux Mint. Linux Mint, I believe, had this by default built into the GUI application for their network manager. But it looks like it might have been in Ubuntu all the time, but you had to install it. It's an article over at Linux.com. And if you don't know what Linux.com is, it's Linux.com. So everything Linux related kind of thing. And it basically shows you there's only a couple commands you need, and this is Ubuntu-based, where you have to add a repo. Okay, so you have to add a PPA, sorry. Then you basically do an update, then you install ap-hotspot. And hotspot will basically allow you to configure, start, and stop your router in a computer. So hypothetically, you can have a two NIC cards in your computer, and by using this, turn your x86 processor architecture computer with lots of RAM in it, it may be the most high performance router you could get in your house, kind of thing. I love the idea of this. I definitely see a use case for this and a need for this, like hypothetically, Cody, we're at some LAN party where everyone has gig ports, and you want the best performance you can possibly get. You don't get it with a router or a switch. You basically get a decent computer, put a whole bunch of gig NIC cards in it, install this, and turn your computer into a router. I doubt you can see better performance with dedicated hardware.
I've read stuff about that before. Who was it years ago was talking about that? I can't remember. There was something on a pod on the show. Maybe it was in Linux or Restless before I was on the show. You may have mentioned it, in fact. I think it was some building a pfSense box or a, what's this? What's the other thing? The squid box, or, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but they were talking about getting an old PC, throwing a bunch of NICs in it in order to basically build your own sort of better router from older hardware. And, of course, if you look at Hack5, you know, they've built that with the homemade router inside the shadow box wall frame they put up on the wall, that type of stuff, you know, and used plexiglass. I mean, yeah, it's amazing what kind of, plus if you crack open a modern day router, like you buy a Cisco router off the shelf today, you crack it open, it's just a bunch of cheap little hardware. Chances are, if you have an older PC laying around, there are some components in there which can outperform even that stuff.
Yeah. Now I do understand it comes with a little bit more responsibility, quote unquote, than just turning on a Linksys router. But I really would expect the throughput to be very high on that full desktop computer.
Oh, of course.
Okay. I really want to not prepare you for this, Cody. But there is a link in here to Linux Insider. I'm going to ask that you click this link, and I'm going to ask that you page down and look at the screenshots. This is called Blue Pup Distro, and on Linux Insider, they call it the pride of the puppy Linux litter. Now, there's a whole bunch of variants and deviations of puppy Linux. Saying puppy Linux is like saying Debian, okay? There's lots of different versions of puppy, and puppy can be based on a lot of different things with a lot of different interfaces and a lot of different use cases. But I'm going to ask you, Cody, what does that first screenshot of Blue Pup Linux looks like to you?
Well, my first
hot mess, baby,
thought was diarrhea. Yeah,
diarrhea of
a AKA Metro. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very Windows 8 tile based, toned down to her 5-year-old. Hey, you like green? Click on the green. It's a big green box. Click on it. There's pine trees behind it because it's green.
Yep.
You like the sun? Click on the yellow box. If you like the sun, or if you like bananas, click on the yellow box. Yeah, just it's a Windows 8 interface knockoff. Yeah. Which, I don't want to go off on a rant here, but there was somebody, Dor, every once in a while you hear somebody say something, either in person or online, and you just clench your fists and you realize it's not worth my time to try to correct them because they're already wrong. Somebody, now, I'm a Nexus 5 owner. Shout outs to other Nexus 5 owners or Nexus owners out there in the internet universe. But I can't remember who it was. I believe I immediately threw him from my circles. But this person on Google Plus found a ROM for Android that made a Nexus 5 looks just like his old Windows phone, and he loved it.
Well, there's all kinds.
Some people like. Yeah, it takes all kinds to make a world. Yeah. Yes, but okay. But flip side of that, something like this. Okay, think about. Hypothetically, 5 years down the road, obviously Windows 8 is an acknowledged failure by Microsoft. Even their internal employees have dubbed it so, like the new Vista. Okay, but let's say hypothetically Windows 9 down the road, 5 years down the road. It's their new Dominus OS, and it has a classic mode and then like a metro mode. You know, if you think about kids that are coming up in schools using this technology, because realistically, you know, they're coming up, they have Windows computers, are going to be more dominant rather than Linux or Chromebooks for now in these classrooms. And if they grow up only knowing the metro interface, then something like this would be a great tool to give them a more stable system, yet with an interface that they're familiar with. So I could see how it would be beneficial in that aspect, but I'll never run it.
Yeah. What I'm sure of is this is no replacement for Metro. While it might have characteristics that look similar to it, I guarantee you there's more than a couple things where someone's familiar with Metro and they see this interface, they'll try to do one of their tasks and it just won't work, will just fail. I think it's because what this Metro interface is not even an actual desktop or an application. This is a Chrome browser plugin that apparently they're running as the quote unquote desktop. I'm sure there's somebody out there just like that guy. Who would run this and get giddy and like call over their friend or their spouse or their child and say, look at this. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. If I'm the guy that informed them how to do it, that's okay. If I'm the guy that informed someone to come look at this link so they can laugh at it, I'm also fine with that. I just am constantly shocked at some of the Linux distributions that strive so hard to look like Windows or Mac or something that they're not. I'm just amazed is all I'll say. I'm just amazed. And I don't think it's good or bad. I'm just amazed.
I can understand wanting to, you know, potentially gain market share by making something a little more aesthetically pleasing, but it needs to have a reason. You know what I mean? Right. Either a business reason to make it usable for newer users, or to just have, you know, a developer say, you know what, I would like a minimalistic desktop, so I made one, and here's what it looks like, because it's all that I really need, and quite frankly, it's all I think that anybody really needs, as opposed to looking at the competition and going, wow, that looks like garbage, nobody likes it, but maybe I could steal some of their users by making this version of Linux look exactly like that.
Right. Yeah. It's, to me, it's also kind of like, what you just epitomized was kind of, to me, today's Linux desktops and Windows desktops, which they're basically just making change for change's sake. Change with a good, bona fide reason, I'm all for. But sometimes you have to just stop and say, what are you thinking? Why would you do that?
Right.
An example I'm going to use is AKA ThistleWeb, or FithleWeb, how he might say, he's slightly inebriated. Who was on HPR all year, New Year's Eve show last year, not this year, went on an hour rant. And at the time, I thought it was almost comical how Nautilus was removing, Ubuntu was removing from the default Nautilus file manager the ability to hit F3 and have split window mode. Why would you remove that feature? I cannot see a plausible reason to actually remove it. I can see you're going to take it out because it relies on something, but you're going to eventually put it back in because there's no logical reason to literally just drop something like that. And I'll say I'm one of the guys that after ThistleWeb said it, I started to use it. And now when I'm on Ubuntu 14.04 system, I'm generally perturbed because I can't split my windows.
Yeah, I've never used that. It does sound interesting.
It's just a different way. It's just, to me, an easier way to drag drop files from one location to another.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm completely dry, Cody.
Okay. Well, I already addressed the emails that we had earlier in the show. Keep listening, everybody. We do have some, we're making some slight tweaks to how we record. We got some great guests coming up, by the way. Any teasers you'd like to throw out there, or do you just want to have it be a surprise tour?
No, there's no real secret. I'm trying to schedule both Kevin O'Brien to come talk on the show. He wants to talk a little bit about PenguinCon and I think conferences in general kind of thing. And I'm trying to get Mark Cockrell on this show again. I realize there's more than a couple of people out there I don't reach out often enough to try to have on a show. Guys like Mark and Kevin, I just enjoy chatting with them. So I'm going to see if we can do a little bit more of that here and there.
Right. Yeah, of course, Mark Cockrell from Everyday Linux, which is a fantastic show. And then Kevin O'Brien, formerly one of the organizers and contributors to OLF, now mainly focusing his efforts on PenguinCon, which I didn't know about until this year, but it's a sci-fi slash Linux technology convention, which if you're not into both of those things, then first of all, what's wrong with you? And second of all, why haven't you already registered for 2015? That looks like an amazing, amazing conference slash festival. And this past year, I believe their keynote speaker was Cory Doctorow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah.
The two painfully obvious things I'm going to say to myself is, so, obviously, PenguinCon needs somebody like Kevin O'Brien. And I mean that in the nicest way possible for PenguinCon. They need somebody to help get the word out a little bit more broad in probably both the sci-fi realm and the Linux realm, if I had to guess. I do like the idea of combination conferences. I know Beyer was heavily contemplating doing a combo fest himself. And secondly, Mark's from Element OP, Everyday Linux. I can never remember, I know you're going to correct me, if he says, life in the context of Linux or Linux in the context of life? Because they both make sense in my mind.
Yes. It's one or the other. It's toss-up. I actually, unfortunately, I'm willing to admit this. I haven't been listening to any of my Linux podcasts lately. I've been far too busy with other life issues.
You have a good excuse, sir.
Yeah. But normally, dude, I you know, you ask me something like that, I'd be like, here's the slogan. I listened to 12 episodes yesterday. Why don't you get on your game? You know, like that's my MO, but yeah, not lately. No,
I'm going to,
I almost have to pull a Russ Winter, or I think even you did this. No, I don't think you ever had to do this, but I remember Russ telling me once, Russ the Beast Winter, AKA the Techie Geek, telling me once, he was like, Cody, I was so behind in my podcasts. I had to just clear the whole thing and start over.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a busy fella, so I understand him saying it too. But I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say life in the context of Linux. I'm going to go with that one.
Well, that should be your opening question when you have him on the show.
I don't want to appear that ignorant, not that quickly, at least.
I don't think it'll taint his opinion of you.
I think it's already tainted enough.
There you go. So you see nothing to lose.
Yeah, win-win.
So just give that a try. Okay. All right. So week in, week out, where can we find you, Dor?
The easiest place is mail at podnos.com, where you can find me on Google Plus. That's right now where I'm most active. I do expect that to shift, to alter, to course correct, if you will, over to Reddit. I'm going to try to also automate some things from Podnuts to Reddit, and maybe a couple other places I find of interest. But we'll have to wait and see about that.
Yes. It's in the works. Yeah. And for those of you who dabble in computer repair, who have thought of it before, or who would just like some good tips on what modern-day computer techs are using to fix systems, please make sure to check out Podnuts Daily. Our good friend Jeff Halish has recently taken over the reins of that show, and he's putting out some great content, having some great guests on the show, resurrecting it in a style that Steve C. would be proud of, who, of course, Steve Cherubino, the original host of the show, and has had other kind of interim hosts since then. But back in full force, he's got a lot of episodes under his belt. He's doing a fantastic job, so please head over to that feed. You go to podnuts.com, click on Podnuts Daily. It's a computer repair show that we have at least once or twice a week. It's a fantastic show. Definitely go check that out. If you want to hit me up, just look for Cody Cooper on Google Plus, or you can also send me an email to cody@podnuts.com, or you can send, if you want to send a voice, or excuse me, an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you want to send in a voicemail, please send it to 7076-PODNUT, that is 7076-763688, Please try to limit it to less than 60 seconds if possible. If you go a little bit long, that's fine, but you don't need to leave a 3 to 5 minute, you know, diatribe message. You can do it in smaller chunks. We'll play it every single week. It's fine. Don't even worry about it. But if you feel like it's more of a long-winded question or comment, don't hesitate to send an email. We would really appreciate it. For those of you who do enjoy our content, we are, of course, taking... We do have an Amazon link. So if you go to podcast.com/Amazon for all of your Amazon purchases, it's just a little redirect link. It gets us a little bit of juice on what you're already buying anyway. You don't pay any more than you're already paying for, but it does help out the network because we do have costs associated with the shows, which we really, really do appreciate help with. We also have a podcast.com/Newegg and /eBay link as well. So for any purchases you're making on those two sites, we would be much appreciated. And please check out podness.com/deals. We do have some content available there for sale and new content coming, to my knowledge. So definitely take a peek there every once in a while because there are some great deals popping on there all the time with all sorts of our affiliate partners as far as that content goes for all sorts of things technology related. And I am Cody Cooper signing off. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us, but it is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.